Welcome everybody to episode 226 of the Kaiju Popcast. You might notice that Chad O'Brien, your host, is speaking kind of poorly today, and that is not because I have been licking Switch cartridges. It turns out I've become a little under the weather, but I hope you can bear with me. Thankfully, this week I've actually got two people to help take some of the talking burden off of me, and that is Chris Charlton over here,
talking,
and Jason Gibson over here.
Hey yo.
That's right. So, you guys have missed out on a week, and I had to cover, and obviously that's what threw my voice into total chaos. That's right. You know, I even a full week was not enough to recover from the pain of covering the news for 45 minutes.
Honestly, that was and not you eating Nintendo Switch cartridges.
That's right. I will say I did lick the lick the cartridge.
Now you can't sell that.
What did it taste like?
It just tasted super bitter. So for those who are kind of curious why I would even do this,
it's because everybody's done it.
And yes,
it's the worst. It's like it's oh god. I mean, like it went from one thing of this is silly. I'll just lick this thing to be silly, and oh no, it tastes really bad. And then it went through every fucking video game news outlet,
and even the mainstream. It's even
all
reached mainstream.
Yeah, just all over media.
Yeah,
it sort of tasting seems like these things, and then going, "What is the deal with that? Why could it be?" And then like the company having to say, "Well, duh, obviously this is a thing for children, or that children may use, and
or
these cartridges are really small, and we don't want, you don't want children or animals to eat them, so we put a chemical in there," and they're like, "Duh." And so, like, now it's come out the fucking other end now, where, like, I think GameSpot, who probably already did a cartridge-licking video really early on, like, after Jeff Gerstmann did it, probably, because they're in the same office, duh. And now, I think yesterday I saw a thing in my YouTube feed, where it was, like, a GameSpot video saying, "Do Switch's cartridges really taste bad?" It's like, you know, that is the point where, like, you're too fucking late, right? You know, it's like, oh, these taste really bad. Do they taste bad? And now it's like, everybody, yes, they taste bad.
Maybe they're just trying to gauge how bad they taste. Like,
well,
you know,
I don't know. Maybe they're trying to put, I didn't watch the video because I'm not fucking stupid. But, like, maybe, like, they're trying to pitch the case of it's an acquired taste, you know?
Yeah, maybe there's somebody at the GameSpot offices who likes the taste of Nintendo Switch cartridges.
Yeah, no, but you know what would be good is if all the cartridges had a different bad taste.
Oh,
there you go. Zelda tastes like bleach. Like,
you know, Bomberman tastes like ammonia.
Tastes like vomit.
Oh, it tastes like sulfur.
There you go.
Some kind of nitrate.
Yeah, right. That's...
Yeah, so there you go. That explains it.
How's the Switch launch been going, Chads? I went into a shop to see if they had one. They didn't have one.
Some shops did.
Our friend Dave said Toys R Us had them. That you could just walk in and have them. Toys R Us in Japan, that is. And I believe Amazon US are shipping them.
Amazon US is kind of sporadically offering them, and actually that has become it's become quite an issue actually, because Amazon really fucked up the day one pre-orders. People pre-ordered these as far back as January 13th after the big presentation, and so when you make your pre-order, there's an expectation that it's going to come to your door on that day.
Yeah.
But people were saying, even as late as like 8, 9, 10, that on the website itself, it said their package was being prepared. But when they talked to Amazon, they would still throw the company in line that it would be delivered that day. And it still wasn't. But then to add on to that kind of insult is that Amazon Prime Now customers, Prime Now being like their super delivery service, basically. Amazon Prime Now people were ordering them and getting them within like 2 to 4 hours of placing the order. So even on the same day, even though they hadn't pre-ordered, like they were just, like I said, sporadically available throughout the day. They would go like, okay, click. And there it was 2 hours later. That's Amazon.
You don't have your own pleasant experiences with Amazon because they lost your PlayStation VR.
Yes, they did. But then I ended up getting two. So,
you have two PlayStation VRs?
Yes.
Well, yeah, the one came in the mail eventually, right?
Yep. Because I ordered a second one.
You managed to sell that one, right?
Yeah, I mean, they were, yeah, very kind. Once the transaction is considered complete, then even if it arrives, like, it's legally your property. So, that obviously worked out for me, but I'm not going to risk that again. No more overseas orders from Amazon for me, unless it's digital. But, so Amazon has been having problems. I haven't heard any problems with any other companies, like, in America, Best Buy or places like that. And I got mine no problem. So, but like you said, there were some stores, I think they were in major areas, that still had shelf units available on the day. I got, my Neon, so the red and blue colored Switch, and this is the first time I've actually held it in my hands. I've seen, like, all the physical specs, and I even made little, like, cardboard cutouts to try to determine how large it would be.
Someone has too much time on it.
I have to pack it in my work bag, so I have to make sure I've got enough space, right? It's a little bit smaller than I was thinking, actually, but it's still quite comfortable to hold in your hands. It's not heavy at all.
Have you been playing it on your TV primarily since you've gotten it? Not like mixing between the two, or like I'm playing tablet almost, for a bit just because I can.
Almost exclusively on the TV because this sickness right now, it's kind of I don't want to get up unless I absolutely have to.
So. Well, you also don't want to get like gross fucking germs all over.
Exactly.
So the one thing I didn't know, or like I kind of, I guess, knew in the back of my mind, but like it didn't twig until recently, and it's annoying in the way that I use appliances, is that like the Joy-Cons, because the Joy-Con grip that comes in the box is the one that doesn't have charging abilities.
Right, it's just a grip.
Right. Which means that if you just have a Switch out of the box, you can't charge the controllers and play at the same time. Like, the Switch has to be docked and you have to have your controllers connected, which is something I never do because I fastidiously, like, turn all of my appliances off if I'm not using them because I always think it's a waste of electricity. That's annoying to me. Now I'm going to have to buy one of those fucking things with a grip, which costs money despite the fact that there's nothing in that fucking grip except for a USB-C port.
It costs a lot of money, doesn't it?
It's like 40. Certainly not as much as like the Pro Controller.
Like 4,000 yen, right? For a fucking, it's just a bit of plastic.
With a USB port in it, yeah.
Yeah, right.
What I will say is, like, don't put too much stock into that. First off, if you turn off the unit, it's still a charging dock, if you put it in the dock. So, it's going to charge anyway. Unless you're so fastidious about your electricity use that you're gonna turn it off and pull it out of the dock. But, Yeah, as long as the controllers are hooked up to the unit while it's in the dock, they will charge as well. And the controllers themselves, they have significant battery life. It said something like 20 hours. So I don't think you're really going to have any issues from regular home play. I mean, I've played about 8 hours total between yesterday and today, and I forgot to put them back in the unit last night, and I've had no problems whatsoever so far. There was a little kind of topic going around online about some syncing issues with the left Joy-Con in particular. It kind of seems like it was solved basically by common sense. So there was, I believe the YouTube channel is Game Explained that did it. Basically all he did was, he showed himself like covering the unit or the controller with his hand and then losing sync because of that. So, it has problems traveling through human flesh, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's every signal, really. I mean, my TV doesn't go through my body if I, you know...
Eat it. If I eat it. What? It's Nintendo Switch consoles go through your body if you eat them, I think.
But at the same time, like, I have... Like, I've been in several positions with these Joy-Cons, like, calm down. So, for example, like, just sitting, and because, like, I'm just so tired, like, my arms are just hanging down almost to the ground, but I'm still playing, and it's no problem whatsoever, and that's, like, through the table, through a couple of other electronic things that it's got to get through.
Because it's, yeah, that's, but that's... Bluetooth, right? I mean, like, so
I've heard it's not that.
I mean, you're not in the days of infrared controllers where, like, you walk in front of the
right,
TV. And
right. But yeah,
I've heard that there are actually some locations that you can't play. Like, apparently, aquariums are no good, and large bundles of cables are also not good. So, just some like random places where you can't play.
Sitting in a big like pile of.
USB
cables. No, it's going somewhere else because, like, you know, that there's that
server farms.
No, there's the story that went viral that was in some Japanese tabloid of like a man dying, like buried under 6 tons of pornography.
Yep. Well, there you go. But, yeah, some other impressions, the Joy-Cons themselves are super light, to the point that they almost feel like toys, but...
There's nothing, I've seen one opened up.
Yeah.
And, like, there's nothing in that fucking thing except, like, a tiny lithium-ion battery. Like, that is, basically, you're just holding the battery, that's it, and, like, a tiny board.
And the rumble thing, whatever, the motor. Yeah. But yeah, syncing, like I said, is no problem. You can connect them and detach them really easily. There's a little button on the back. The only thing I will say is that I'm really disappointed. There's no headphone jack in either of the controls. So, if I want to listen to the game, I have to listen to the TV. And
where is the headphone jack?
Well, I mean, put a headphone... Your TV's got a headphone jack, right?
Right,
or,
but...
like, you just playing it on tablet mode, I suppose.
Well, yeah, there's
but,
that.
Like, where is the headphone jack on the tablet?
It's on the top, but at the same time, yeah, like... TV, like, I'd have to extend the cord forever. I don't think my wireless, the Sony Platinum, I don't think that's compatible. But, I could be wrong. I don't know. Anyway, it's a slight annoyance, I'll say, but it's still an annoyance,
There are things, little things that I sort of saw and was appreciative of was like not just the multi-regionness of it, but like English support on Japanese retail releases, which is like a nice thing to have.
Yeah, that was in Zelda, right?
In Zelda, but in English.
I would say that's almost a given on a global release as big as Zelda.
That's not a given at all. Like, not even if Zelda came out on PS4, say, I'd be like, I don't know whether that has English or not. You know, it's like the Souls games don't, right?
So I mean the
fact that anything near approaching that is like is a good sign.
I forget, is Zelda voiced or is it just the same?
Yeah, it's voiced.
Oh, okay.
But what I will say on that note, I don't like that it forces you into the option. I like playing games in Japanese or Japanese voice. But right. I like the English text as well. So, but you don't get any kind of option when you're playing Zelda. If your system is in English, it's voice and text English.
That is a lot of games though. I mean, like that comes down to an individual developer's, you know, sort of thing. I don't think like that's a Switch level thing. And I think like it is reasonably recent that you've had that volume of choices in Japanese games. Like, that's a pretty recent thing.
But still, I mean, because it's recent, like, I would expect Nintendo to be following that trend. Zelda is all about taking trends from every other game and making it their own. It's an open world game where you climb towers to get local information.
Yeah, but that's not, from a design perspective. Like, I don't think, like, anything on a usability or accessibility.
I suppose.
It's going to be backed up by Nintendo. Although, yeah, I mean, I also kind of like that you can just switch between store. Hey, Switch, there you go. You can switch between different country storefronts just like through a thing in the option. Like, you don't even need like 3 fucking accounts, right? You just have one and then.
Right. And it has no like IP detection too, which is really great.
Yeah.
Although I wonder if that will change when like the service actually begins in fall.
Maybe, or I can imagine once that paid service kicks in, then there'll be something to stop you getting 3 free games. I dare say they just have the same game for every territory anyway. Yep. And you know where it's going to be? It's going to be fucking Ice Climber, and it's going to be fucking Urban Champion, and it's going to be fucking Yoshi's Cookie. No, it's not going to be never going to be Mother.
Luigi's Mansion.
$20 for that. Luigi's Mansion is good. Luigi's Mansion is a good game. It's going to be the shittiest NES games.
No, I meant like the old, I'm thinking the one where the educational Luigi game from the Super Nintendo. What's that called?
Mario's Missing.
Yeah, that one. That one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then there was Mario's Time Machine as well. Hey, speaking of games from the mid-1990s, you know what I wanted to talk about that you guys don't.
I don't mind talking about it at all.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Fire Pro Wrestling's back. Oh, it's made me so happy. And it was actually like, you know, you work with nerds at your place of work when a Fire Pro Wrestling game was the cause of like 30 minutes of like coffee maker discussion in my workplace on Friday.
At a school? teachers?
It was great. Wow. A couple of friends of mine who are wrestling fans. And got into it because of Fire Pro Wrestling. Like, and so many people like got into wrestling because of Fire Pro Wrestling. Shinsuke Nakamura, who's like used to be the biggest star in New Japan, now he works for WWE, has like said several times like it's Fire Pro Wrestling that got me into wrestling, because it's the only wrestling game that's a good. Well, I mean, like that wrestling game and like the games that Aki made that were for WCW and WWF, like on the N64, are the only wrestling games that are good games. And then Fire Pro Wrestling is the only wrestling game that's a good game that's light, that captures the drama of pro wrestling. So it's very exciting to have this back. What was what it was kind of known for was having like rosters of having like 600 fucking wrestlers in the game, like straight out the gate. And they'd be from every promotion in the world, and just with their names subtly, you know, it would be like Bone Cold Rick Austin or something like that, right? but obviously that was in the 90s, and like there were, you know, this new one's sprite based as well, but like it was all 2D sprites, so they could just like subtly change anything. You know, it was a different age, and obviously now you can't do that. You know, they're gonna stamp all over that. So there's only like 30 wrestlers in the game apparently, but it's also known for its creation suite and like how deep that level of creation is. Like you can tweak there's 2,000 moves, 2,000 create parts, and you can tweak like the AI logic, so you can make if the computer's controlling them, you can make that wrestler behave in a different way or whatever, and it's in their own unique style. And that's all going to be online and shareable. So that means, you know, all the lovely, lovely copyright infringement that you can hope for, basically. So yeah, I'm very, very excited that Fight Pro is coming back on Steam, oddly, and PS4.
What's the ETA on that?
Early access in Q2, apparently.
Ooh, yeah, excited.
I would imagine the console release comes late, you know, it says future console release. I would hope later this year. Otherwise, I might have to, like, I think my PC can probably run it. But then I would have to get like a fucking game controller for my PC or figure out how to get my DualShock 4 running.
Well, I mean, if you have a PC, do you have an Xbox controller? Because that just connects directly to the PC nowadays.
I've only got a PS4 controller, and that's going to be...
Go buy an Xbox controller from the used store.
I've heard like the Switch Pro controllers connect to PCs as well.
I think the DS4 is just supported by Steam now.
Oh, you can just plug it in and it works?
I could be wrong on that.
I don't know. My DS3 works, but I had to get like this whole janky driver setup thing.
I will probably still buy that twice. You know, I'd buy it on the PC until the PS4 version came out, and then buy it on PS4. And if it comes on Switch, that would be amazing, because I could like that. I can imagine that being brilliant for commutes and brilliant, like sitting on the couch while your wife watches TV or something.
And so, then you could buy it three times.
I would buy it all the times.
Nice.
This is like my game of the year already decided. So I'm definitely lining myself up for a brutal disappointment.
I just did the research machine, and yes, in late 2016, Valve announced the all versions of Steam would offer native support for DualShock 4. So there you go.
Well, there you go. I might get it on PC.
Nice.
Good. Thank you for allowing me to vent. I know you neither of you have anything to contribute.
I'm just glad you're happy. I'm just glad you're happy.
I almost invited Dave on the, like, I saw he was on Skype. I'm like, can you come on?
Well, hey, you know, as long as you have access to your favorite games, right? And on that note, let's go to some other news. We have Microsoft. Microsoft has actually come out this week by saying that they're going to offer something called the Xbox Game Pass. And with this service, it's a $10 a month service, and it's basically Netflix for games. But in a different way than like Gamefly is. So, if you pay the $10, you'll have access to over 100 different games, including, Mega Man, Saints Row 4, Halo 5 Guardians, Payday 2, and a couple, and several more.
A mix of 360 and Xbox One stuff.
Right. And where this differs from the PlayStation Now catalog is that these games are basically yours. You can download them onto your console and play them whenever you want, as long as
you're a member of the service, right?
Right. Now, they have also said that this is in addition to Games with Gold. So if you still want to play those games online, you're going to have to be part of Games with Gold. Basically bringing that cost to, I don't know, something like, well, this is going to be $10 a month, so that's $120 a year. So basically $160 a year, $170. I think it's $50 a year, but
yeah. Well, congratulations to the unemployed for that one. Oh, they don't have the cash. Wealthy students? I don't know.
I mean, you know, we've had this same kind of conversation concerning PlayStation Now. If there's like a game you really want to play and you just can't find it, or it's super expensive on Amazon or something like that, then plunk down the $10 for that month and there you go.
And I was a PlayStation Now subscriber for a month, and it seemed like a good service. But except for the fact that it really annoyed me that if you subscribe, that isn't a catch-all for getting all the games that's on the service. You know, you still have to pay to rent some of like these other ones. So I was like, I can't play that one either.
That weird tier system.
What would turn me off this one? Like, this sounds good, especially if they continue to grow it, but PlayStation Now is more attractive because of the fact that you can stream it, you know, because it's just these days it's fucking hard drive space that does my hitting.
That's true.
I mean, these games are like fucking 60 gigabytes large. It's really annoying. That's one of the biggest attractions for me that sealed the deal of, I'm going to get a Switch, is that I know if I buy a Switch game on cartridge, it's going to run the fucking game off the cartridge and I don't have to like eat up my storage space with it, you know, because I'm so annoyed with, I want to get a game, but, I have to like basically delete a game forever off my hard drive because I'm not going to download it again, you know. I'm gonna have to decide I really really am never gonna play God of War 3 remastered again.
Especially like you know, we all have it very good here in Japan, but I hear stories all the time about how people in the States, they'll download a game and then it turns out like it was a failed download or something went wrong and it's like a 60 gigabyte game and they have a cap per month where it's like you can only get 200 gigabytes. And then they're like, if I want to download this game again, that's already more than 50% of my total cap or something.
It's just, gaming systems.
Although, I mean, on the other hand, Xbox has offered support for external drives forever, and PlayStation 4 finally capitulated and offered support. That update hasn't come out yet, but it's in the works. It's still in the beta. So when that comes out. I've got a 2 terabyte external that will help me with some of those games. For my Switch, I took no chances. I went 128 gigabyte SD card. Although I will say one problem with the Switch, going back there real quick, is that your saves are actually tied to the console itself. I mean, for some games, it's not that big a deal, like, I guess, Zelda. But, let's say Super Smash Brothers. You want to play, you want to go over to your friend's house, he has a Switch, you don't feel like packing yours, so you go over to your friend's house, you add your account to his system. If this were PlayStation, you could do that, download the game, and it would have your save, because it's in the cloud. But here, that's not an option. If you don't bring your Switch and connect it to his TV, then you will not have that save, which on some games can actually mean you're limiting content and stuff.
I mean, that sucks, but it's nice the Switch is portable, at least, I suppose.
But cloud saves. Again, though, you can't expect...
Yeah.
Your Nintendo to be anything.
Honestly, like I kind of think this is intentional to make people think like, oh yeah, well at least this is portable, like instead of just relying on cloud saves. But it's not that It's not a good thing, really.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I thought when you said that you were talking about access to games, I thought you were going to talk about new ways and new places to buy your video games.
Ah, yes. So let's go on to that. Maybe Jason, you want to talk about this?
I'll lead us into it, I guess. So Twitch, the streaming website, has decided to start selling video games. They're going to go into competition with Steam, seems like, and start selling video games directly from streamers' web pages, which is the weird thing. So, like, if you're watching a stream, say you're watching somebody play CSGO or Hearthstone or whatever, I'm not sure exactly how it's supposed to work, but I believe they'll, like, is there a store or is there, like, a link, promoted link? I don't know. Whatever. If you buy a game from while you're watching a particular streamer on Twitch, that person gets, like, a 5% cut of whatever game that you just bought. And then the developer gets 70, and then Twitch gets 25, I believe was the stated division. So basically what's going to happen is you're going to turn all Twitch streamers into whores.
I mean, well, they already are.
But like they're going to start like basically putting commercials into their streams to try to make you buy games.
Yeah, direct. Like, it's super gross. It's super gross. And, you know, one thing I saw, I saw it was like in response to a thing that Lazy Game Reviews, who's a very good YouTuber, and I recommend his stuff, but like he was talking about it, and then like one of the responses is, well, okay, that's me settled then, like every Twitch stream I do is going to be like fucking Train Simulator 2017 or whatever that really fucking popular train game is, you know, on Steam. So you're just going to get like whatever.
Farm Simulator, isn't it?
There's a train game that's insanely fucking popular, and that
I think
just
it's just called Train Simulator.
I thought it was the farm
maybe
one.
Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But, like, it is just going to be, like, people just endlessly twitching that, you know? Like, and, yeah.
Yeah, Train Simulator and Farm Simulator are made by the same companies, Jason. But I remember Train Simulator has made big news several times for being like the most expensive DLC you'll ever get, because to purchase like all the DLC, they have every train line like around the world. It's well over like $1,000.
Well, it's interesting that this is Amazon again, like backdooring. Does Amazon have already a direct PC gaming service?
I don't think so.
Well, Twitch has their own service. They're going to have.
I mean, Amazon owns Twitch, right? So, I mean,
like, yeah exactly. So,
yeah. I mean, they just came out with the whole Amazon Prime transfers, and now they have Twitch Prime and stuff like that. So,
Yeah, so I mean, like, that's kind of, I think, like, that's the implicit.
Well, but, like, what I want to know is, like, if you want to buy it, like, if this is just, like, something like supporting your favorite streamer, where there's just, like, you're watching their stream and there's a link, like, shop from this page and you can buy whatever you want, or if it's just, like, you know, buy whatever game this streamer is playing and only that game.
Oh, yeah, I think you have to, it's just going to be, like, you're going to be watching the Twitch stream, and there'll be a button that says, buy this game.
Buy the game that they're playing
right now. Buy the game that they're playing right now, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be, like, a pass-through. I honestly wouldn't be too upset with an Amazon pass-through or something like that. We have an Amazon pass-through on our site.
I mean, like, something that's been done for ages.
I was kind of hoping it would be like that, because then it would just be like, you know, I'm just supporting this guy that I like to watch, you know? I want to buy something, so I'm going to give him 5% of the stuff that I'm buying.
Yeah.
To play devil's advocate just a little bit, I do watch some of these streamers. I really like Boogie 2988. And sometimes, like, I'll be watching his stream and I'll see something like a $60 donation or a $100 donation. And I'm thinking, you know, if people are willing to donate that much anyway, like, why not get something out of it as well? Although I understand at the same time, like, a $60 donation now becomes like a $5 donation plus a $60 game for them, but it's still, I don't know, it might actually reduce revenue in some cases because of that.
Oh, no, 5% of $60 is $3.
Sorry, yeah.
No, well, I know, but I'm just
tired
saying,
like, and if, sick. Okay.
I understand, but it just sort of reinforces your point, is that instead of getting the $60 donation, now they're getting $3.
Yeah. So you might actually see some Twitch streamers who don't want to do this. I don't know.
I mean, if it comes down to sort of literally nickeling and diming, then at 5%, it's not worth it, perhaps.
Yeah.
Well, if you've already got Steam, like,
the Steam split is 70-30, yeah, right? So, and this is taking 5% from Twitch's split.
Right. Yeah.
And so, like, especially for people who basically focus on one game only, like the people who just spend months and months and months playing Skyrim or something like that, like, you're not going to get that many new purchases of Skyrim, I don't think. It's people who already have the game and are just watching what you do with it, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Versus somebody like Boogie, who plays a new game like every 2 weeks or so. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I think,
realistically, like, even if you are the best Twitch streamer, like, how many people are watching, like, a top Twitch stream at a time? Like, a couple of thousand?
No,
a lot more than that. I'd say some Hearthstone, like, dedicated Hearthstone streams will get 20,000 viewers.
Even 20,000, you're going to, out of those 20,000 people that are watching, like, a Hearthstone stream, right? Probably, I would say 15,000 of those people already have the game, like, minimum, right? So then you've got like 5,000. You're probably going to convert maybe 500 of those people to buy the game. Now, let's say Hearthstone was, I don't know, a $20 game and not free to play.
Right.
500 times $1, like, that's $500, which is, you know, I mean, like, that's a nice bit of pocket money, but like, that's not something that's going to be like enough of a motive to you to make you shell for like the entire length of your Twitch stream, I suppose.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, but most streamers, I don't think, make their money from Twitch directly. A lot of them get it from their YouTube. They'll do Twitch and then use that as like promotion for their YouTube videos, which is where they actually make their money from.
I've seen the reverse as well. A lot of people get Twitch sponsorships and that's where they make a lot of their money there.
But that's true. That's also true.
Yeah. Interesting times to be a gamer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Speaking of which, we played games.
We did.
Yep.
So shall I go first and see how long my voice holds out?
You're poorly.
Go for it.
Okay, so I played two games this week. Both of them the exact same in every single way.
Yeah.
Both of them
pretty big open world games. Yeah.
That's right, featuring robotic dinosaurs. Those are not in Zelda yet.
Yet.
So I've been playing Horizon Zero Dawn. I'll talk about that one first because I started that first. And that is an absolutely gorgeous game, just straight out the gate. I forget what the engine is called, but whatever that engine is, it makes a substantially, like, living open world. You can see NPCs are sometimes out in the world, and, like, you can't interact with them. They're just out there, like, they're doing their own lives, like, they're hunting other animals, and I thought that was pretty cool. There's all kinds of natural wildlife, and I'm actually more excited, kind of, because I know that this is going to be the engine that Death Stranding is built on.
Decima is the name of the engine.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, thank you for that. The So yeah, the Decima engine is really good, and I'm sure everybody has said this numerous times already, but it is extremely surprising that a game like this is coming out of Guerrilla. Guerrilla, for those who don't know, are the makers of the Killzone series, and that's basically all they've done. Since they were founded, I think they made like one game before Killzone, but, yeah, that's their legacy. And then you come in and this is a game with combat, like you shoot bows and everything like that, but it's also a very human, like emotional game. You're dealing with a lot of people. You're dealing with, incredible, like issues, about, a lot of social issues as well. It's a lot of fun. So you play as Aloy, who is, kind of an outcast girl, and, she's shunned by the tribe. Like, it's illegal to even talk to her. But she grows up a little bit outside of the tribe's world, cared for by another guy, who's also an outcast, and she learns from the wild, right? So she has all these special skills that they don't, and that helps her. And then it turns out she has some kind of connection to the machines. Now, this world is set super far in the future, where basically life as we know it is over. Like, nature has taken over, but at the same time, all machinery has kind of, formed into natural shaped beasts, like horses and cougars and things like that. And so they stalk the world, but, yeah, you go out and you kill them and you harvest their parts and you craft things. In many ways, it's like a Far Cry game. So there are even towers that you climb and, you activate those to get information. But the towers here are actually, I mean, I'm not going to spoil anything, but it's quite a departure from, the towers you would expect in a game like that. But, yeah, you go around, you, kill all these different creatures, including humans. Sometimes you have to fight other humans, and, you'll gather their parts, craft new items, you get all kinds of different weapons and outfits, that help you with different elements. So the combat and foraging is all very interesting, but, the biggest part is the story itself. So like I said, you're an outcast, but, like the whole story is like, what happened to the humans? Why are the machines this way now? And is there any way to return? And so you're kind of exploring, that aspect of like what it means to be human. And, it's really cool.
Is this, the vibe that I got when I first saw that trailer was that this was like a westernized kind of take on Monster Hunter in many a way, or that's what it seemed to me just at first glance. Does that hold water at all?
No. So there are some larger creatures that you will take a long time to take down. But, most of what you'll be doing is, just taking on small little dudes and going from mission to mission, on, you know, various quests. I just one quick little note. I do like that the game actually separates what is like a main quest from a side quest from an errand. So errands are like the least important things. You can completely ignore those. Side quests are things you can do to add a little bit of flavor to the story. And then obviously the main quests are the big parts.
But you had said before that you were very much in open world fatigue.
That is true. And like, I mean, I still kind of am, but mostly because like I want to play these games, but like I just don't think I'll be able to finish them. That's the whole thing. Like, I know I'll be able to start them, and I really like exploring these open worlds. Mm. But yeah, being able to finish them is a whole other issue. So yeah, I mean, I've still got Nier to finish and Horizon, and I just started Zelda. So yeah,
It is very pretty. It is a very good looking game.
Yes, and it does have like an extensive photo mode, which is, you know, all the rage these days, and including such things as being able to change the time of day. So if you don't like how the sun is reflecting off the walls, then you can just move the sun a little bit.
Sure, that's making some people very happy.
Yes.
I mean, one of the things, like, to sort of break away from that to the Switch, right? Like, that you can only share screenshots, right? There's no streaming on that yet. But I've heard, like, you can, like, doodle on it, and you can put text on your screenshots as well, which is quite clever. Like, it's just you're making... It's not only are you sharing screenshots, but you're going to have a bunch of Nintendo Switch memes propping up.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen that. I haven't even pressed the share button yet, so okay. I'll have to check out. But you
try it,
honestly, I kind of wished for some kind of either video or GIF creation capability. But there's not any of that yet.
So. Yeah, I would imagine even if, yeah, I think I heard that streaming was going to be a thing on Switch, but obviously you're not going to get like the video editing tools and things like that that you get on PS4 or Xbox One, just because there's no hard drive on that thing of any, you know, remote size. So, yeah.
Although, to be fair, like the video it has is not of significant size either. It's 720p, so
that's still a chunk, you know, if you've only got like 28 gigs of internal storage on that thing, you know. That's still a fair amount of data.
Certainly. I'm just comparing it to like my like 30-minute 4K videos on PS4 Pro, and it's like, Jesus, I have to delete a game just to make a video or something.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, the open world of Horizon versus the open world of Zelda. Very different. Zelda always seems, you know, I think, when we first saw Breath of the Wild, like, it seemed kind of empty in an odd way, you know, and I think, like, the video that I've seen of it, like, the expense of it and the free-roaming nature of it, it seems, you know, far beyond, and everything that it's doing systems-wise is far more interesting than Zelda has ever been. Like, it's a radical kind of overhaul for that. But still, that world seems pretty empty.
No, so I know exactly what you're talking about. Like, I had the same kind of reservations when I was watching the early, like, preview videos and everything. But, when I get into the world, it's actually, there's quite a lot more to do than I expected. And most of that is because, I'm like a resource collector. So, when I see a boar or something like that, I have to go hunt it down. And, like, there are all these enemy goblin camps that you can take out, and by taking them out, you'll unlock chests, and the chests contain, you know, new weapons or items that you can sell, and that's all cool.
Yeah, loot. Yeah, that's the weirdest, like, the weirdest thing for a Zelda game. It's a fucking loot game, you know?
Yeah, it's really weird. So, in fact, like, it's gone so far that, like, heart containers, I mean, I've only played about six to 8 hours so far, but, heart containers are basically gone now. I'm just gonna say that without saying, like, what happens, but, to replace that, but, like, The only two Zelda games I've played in the past are Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask. So I'm by no means a Zelda expert, but at the same time, like, one thing I kind of hated about those games was, you know, everyone would tell me that Zelda is all about exploration, and, like, I got that feeling, but the reward for exploration was always just a heart piece.
Like, right, yeah, or like a 500 rupee.
Yeah, right.
Whereas
here, yeah, like you said, the loot system now, you get weapons and armor, and armor is something that you have to actually pay attention to. Like, I just got myself a warm doublet, so I'm actually able to survive in cold mountains now. So that's another thing, like, hot and cold are kind of a big deal.
I have heard, like, the sort of the devil's advocate to, like, the loot stuff is, like, weapon durability means, like, you wind up getting good weapons, but then it's like, oh, I don't want this to break, I'll just keep it, and then you never fucking use it, basically.
Well, not even just that, like, again, I'm still in the early game, but weapon management or just item management in general is absolutely a mess. I mean,
do you think that was something that was really built for Wii U when the tablet's in your hands and you're playing on TV?
Possibly, yeah, probably, most likely actually. But yeah, it's like I'm never short on weapons. That's not a problem. But at the same time, like you said, like the weapons break. I don't mind using my strong weapons. I use my claymore, I use my soldier swords and everything. But then it's like those break, and then I don't like having an empty slot, so I'll just pick up something, and then I'll find something a little bit better, or it's like a different type of weapon, like a spear versus, you know, a sword, and different weapons actually do have different effects. So, for example, there are rocks you can break to pick up certain items, and if you hit the rock with a sword, it actually does a lot of damage to your sword versus hitting it with a hammer. Yeah, there's a lot of dynamic scaling to a lot of the things that happen. So, for example, you can climb on almost everything, which is really neat. But at the same time, like, you use up stamina when you're climbing, and it does have a dynamic shift. If you're climbing a very steep, like, 90-degree, you know, angle, it's going to take your stamina down a lot more than going on a gentler incline. Which, of course, it makes sense, but it's like, I've just got to prepare for this as well. But at the same time, like, it's those little touches that are actually quite nice. One thing that was annoying from a playing through it perspective, but kind of interesting from a game design perspective, is when there's dynamic weather in the game, and when it was raining, I couldn't climb a cliff face because the rain kind of makes it too slippery to climb. And I thought that was pretty cool. But there's other small things, like there's a GIF going around on the internet of somebody basically trying to cheese an enemy by running away from them but holding a bomb in the air and dropping it behind them to basically explode on the enemy, right? But then they drop the bomb, the enemy basically stops and kicks it like a soccer ball into you, and it explodes. Yeah, lots of little things are actually really cool. And this is a game in which you can basically ask, can I? And the answer is usually, yes, you can. One of the most interesting things I did was, you know, I picked up an axe, and it says it's the woodcutter's axe. I'm like, okay, then I'm going to go cut wood. And I went out to the trees and just hit a tree, and suddenly it fell down. I was like, oh, okay, That's actually pretty cool. And it actually worked out well for me in a later area where there was this giant gorge, and lots of tall trees in the area. I cut down a tree and it made a little log bridge. So, so I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems like the most role playing gamey Zelda since Zelda 2, basically.
Certainly.
Yep. Yeah. I'm excited about it. I liked the things from the GDC talk on Zelda where they prototyped it in basically original NES Zelda graphics. It's updated with shadows and stuff. It's that is something that's in their back pocket that they can put on the eShop at some point, I'm sure.
Back to the point about maps being empty and everything, I will say that, if you're not trying to collect every resource and you're just going from objective to objective, then that can kind of seem like a drag because they actually are quite far from each other, 10 minutes of running. There are also shrines almost everywhere, really. And the shrines are not like the temples of previous games. But they're still small challenges. They take about 5 to 10 minutes to complete. And I think it was Giant Bomb that kind of described them as portal levels within Zelda. That's actually a very apt description. So, you have a certain set of abilities, and you have, these little physics-based problems in these shrines.
It kind of sounds like the tombs that were in, the Tomb Raider reboot.
Oh, yeah, to go along with that portal imagery, there are usually, lighted switches that you have to activate, and the two colors of the switches are always blue and orange. So,
it goes with your neon switch.
Yeah. well, that's blue and red, but
yeah. Which don't did forget, you get, by the way?
Oh, I got. Neon one? I said that right at the beginning of the podcast. Let me roll back and play it again. I said something about getting the neon blue and red. I guess you can't hear me because I'm sick and talking quietly, but that's all the games I've played, and I'm going to shut up now because, oh my god, my throat hurts.
Jason, go ahead.
So I played Dishonored 2, which I got a good deal on it a couple weeks ago, so that's pretty much all I've been playing for the past 2 weeks. I know Chad's talked about it before. When it first came out, you played two levels and you haven't even played any more since, right?
I got to the level you take a boat somewhere and then you do a level on that stage, and that's where I finished.
Okay, well, after the first level you take a boat to every level, so you're on the second level then. I think I'm on mission 8, I think. I guess I could give some of my impressions. I think it's really awesome. I think it's fucking amazing. I chose to play Emily instead of Corvo because I played Corvo in the first one. And her powers are really fun. She's got that mesmerize. How did you get any powers for her? Any of the really cool ones?
I'm trying to remember. It's actually been a while since I played. All I remember is the kind of grappling hook power.
They replaced Corvo's blink with a far reach, it's just a big grappling hook. And you can upgrade that though to grapple people to you, which is kind of cool. She got some really cool ones though, mesmerize, which puts this weird thing, you create this weird geometric anomaly thing that will mesmerize enemies, and then when it fades away they forget that it was there, and you can upgrade it to affect up to 4 people. So if there's a big group of enemies and you can't get by them, you just pop one of those things in there and then walk right by them. It's kind of cool. Doppelganger, which is pretty cool. You can do some really cool stuff with the doppelganger and what was the other power? Domino, you can link enemies together, and then whatever happens to one of them will happen to all of them. So, if you get a doppelganger, which creates a copy of yourself, and then domino link it to like another enemy who's really far away that you don't have access to, then you can choke out your own doppelganger and it will choke out the enemy who's far away, which is kind of cool. And I went through a couple of levels that were really, really, really amazing. I know, Chad, you said that like they got really like rave reviews from people. I went through the Clockwork Mansion level, which was really cool. And after I went through it, I went and read sort of like a guide on the level to see stuff that I missed. And apparently there's a way to get through the entire level just like from the beginning, just walking through back walls and stuff. You never actually have to go through the clockwork part of the level. It's kind of cool. And then I went through, it's not called the time travel level. It's like some mansion, some later. But you get, you go there and it's all dilapidated and run down and you're looking for this guy and you find the guy and he's insane and he can't help you. And then the outsider comes in and gives you this timepiece, and using the timepiece, you can warp back to 3 years ago and into the exact same place that you are. So you can warp back and forth in between 3 years ago and now, to sort of make your way through to find out what you need to find out from this guy. And it's really, really kind of an interesting little mechanic they put in there, because like if you warp back, like the mansion is like in full repair and like there's guards everywhere. But there's some really, really hairy places you have to get through. So you can sort of warp back into the dilapidated version, walk to the other side, warp back in time, and then like pop up behind a guard, choke him out, hide him, and then warp back to the dilapidated future version. It's really cool. And the interesting thing was, I didn't even know this until about halfway through the level, you can sort of fold out this fan from the top of the timepiece while you're holding it in your hand. And if you look through the fan, it'll show you the other timeline while you're in your current timeline. So you can sort of see where the guards are walking in the other timeline while you're still in the dilapidated timeline. It's a really cool mechanic. I really, really liked it.
Yeah. Sounds very similar to the cause and effect level you were playing in Timefall.
Yeah, in Timefall 2. Yeah, right.
Yeah, it was really, really amazing. It was really good. Although I will say that the level immediately preceding that level, if you do the completely stealthy, non-lethal route that I'm doing, in finishing that time travel level will completely invalidate everything that you did in the previous level. Like everything you did just like is gone because you changed time.
Yeah.
it was kind of like I did all this cool stuff and then none of it mattered. I was like, but no, it's still fun. So yeah, no, it's good. It's really good. And I got it for half off. So I'm very satisfied.
Cool. Yeah, I played a couple of things. I played, because again, it was half off, but I finally played Inside. And because Inside's only a nice 2 hours long or whatever, I also finished Inside. So I put my thoughts on it. I wrote a thing on the website, about what I thought about it. I liked it a lot. I ultimately didn't come away from it with the sort of fervor and adulation that everybody seems to have for it. But yeah, I mean, I liked what it was going for, but at the same time, I was cognizant of it being basically, you know, it was an Oddworld game, like in 2017, you know, it didn't seem to be doing that much mechanically different, or special, but, you know, I dug it for what it was. And you can read what I thought about that on the website. But, the main thing that I've been playing really, really was, Yakuza 0. I thought I'll take a punt. Actually, I thought what happened, Chad, was like, I'm going to get Horizon. This is what I thought, because my family were away last weekend. I was like, I'm going to buy a fucking video game. I'm going to play it for once. So I put the PS4 on, and like, this was when the Horizon reviews were dropping. So I was like, oh, that must mean it's out, right? You know, and I didn't know that the press had put their reviews up early.
Right.
For Horizon, because like Sony were really confident in it or whatever. So that was one case where early reviews actually lost them a sale. I was only free that weekend. I was like, I'm gonna get me Horizon. Oh, it's not on, but like I'm gonna get something, I'll get Yakuza instead. So Yakuza 0 or Ryugakotoku 0 that came out last year in Japan. This is an exciting game, gents. Do you know some of the exciting things you can do in this game?
Pachinko.
You can play pachinko. You can do karaoke. You can do such exciting mainline quests as the one I'm in right now, which is research a real estate investment company.
Yeah, isn't there something where like you have to answer the phone at like a very specific time?
I haven't done that. Dare say I might do.
I've just seen all these GIFs of like of Kiryu just like dramatically pulling the phone away from the receiver and just going whoosh, like.
Oh yeah, he does do that like an awful lot. He does like to pose.
Yes,
at every opportunity. It's like I played Space Harrier for a bit, and he was like, "I'm gonna check out this game." Whoa! Like he pins himself in the back of the chair, or whatever. but this game, to get an idea of like of how weird this game is, right? You have to. This doesn't autosave, which is annoying. It doesn't autosave. You have to save at a payphone. You have to go to a payphone and then there's like copious fucking payphones, right?
Jeez, what is this, 1999?
Yeah, well,
it's zero, so yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's set in the bubble economy, so like everybody's throwing cash around, and that's like basically the plot of it, you know, because you know in the bubble there was so much like real estate development, right? And so like the story kicks off with like this one empty lot in Kamurocho, which is like the, you know, the analog for I guess Shinjuku, Kabukicho, I suppose. In the game, like there's this one vacant lot that all of like the Yakuza family, the different Yakuza families are like vying over, because if they control that, then there's no other place that, you know, there's nowhere else to build on, so that then they can cash in on the places they've built. It's a really fucking mundane fucking boring way to start the video game off, but basically it's an investment scam that it's built on. But anyway, you have to manually save, so you can't save for the first 40 minutes of this game because there's all the cutscenes and then the tutorial stuff and then more cutscenes and stuff like that. So before you can save the game, like right, this is them laying the cards out. The most important thing. You're going to establish these characters. Of course, you have to know how to walk around. You have to know how to fight. You know, that's pretty key for this game. But before you can even save the game, you have to play the karaoke mini game, like rhythm game tutorial. It's like, this is the second most important thing after punching in this video game is karaoke. So, yeah. I don't know. I hate Shenmue with a massive passion. But what I like about Yakuza is that it recognizes what was bad about Shenmue, which was that Shenmue was po-faced and boring and nothing happened in that game. But in Yakuza, like shit happens every five paces. Like someone wants to fight you, or like there's a little side game for you to do. You know, or like there's this guy. There's like a massive 7-foot guy that's constantly like roaming around the city, and if he finds you and beats you up, he'll take all your cash. But if you can beat him, then you take all the his cash that he's carrying at that moment. So like, you know, it's shit like that's going on, and it's definitely absurd at the same time as it is a gritty crime game. It's also got, you know, exception. I'm not quite at this point, but I do know that there is a section where you have to train a dominatrix in the arts of dominatrixing, and also a bowling thing. And when you win the bowling game, you win a chicken, like a live chicken, and he becomes your manager.
The chicken becomes your manager?
Yes.
What?
Yeah, this game is strange, but yeah, it's good, it's funny, as well as actually, you know, I mean, I said it is like a dull setup, that it's all like about this sort of basically white collar crime in Yakuza, which is kind of a theme in the Yakuza games, as I understand it, is the transforming role into, like, you know, these used to be rough, hardened criminals or whatever, and they're moving through into, as Yakuza modernized, into white collar crime, right? And that is boring, but like as a procedural, like I enjoy that, and I get a kick out of it. Like it's a good and it's a well written, it's very well written and very well localized as well. You know, if you play it in English, like it's English subtitles with Japanese voices. Yeah, it's good. I kind of dig it. Feels a little bit old because this was like a PS3, PS4 game when it first came out.
Yep.
But you know, what you're going to do, I do really want to play Yakuza 6 because it's got wrestling in it.
I actually have Yakuza 6 sitting like right over here where all my games are.
Right.
Still plastic sealed. Still
in shrink wrap. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. You should play it.
Yep. Although I'm afraid of like not being able to follow any of the plot because I've never played any of the main entries in the series. So,
I played a little bit. I played about a third of Yakuza 4. That's my only experience with it. But I mean, Zero, of course, like it's a prequel, so it's a good like jumping on point. All of the games. Like, well, I don't know about all of them, but 4 has like this massive fucking optional thing where it's just Yakuza 1, 2, and 3, the movie, and you just like watch like a 20-minute rundown of everything that happens in this game, which is always, then something good happened, but then something bad happened, then something good, but then something bad. Like, oh, that's all I can remember from watching that video file in Yakuza 4, is it's like blah 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 blah, and then like a dramatic pause, and it goes, "Dugga."
But it comes with a free Frogurt.
Dugga, scashy. Yeah, yeah. So I mean, yes. Yeah, I wouldn't. I think like they pump these out with such regularity that they kind of expect people probably come and go at this point.
Yeah, I'm sure. But yeah.
They're kind of. I think they are probably for the most part self-contained, except for like, you know, you just have to know that Kiryu like grew up in an orphanage in Okinawa, and then
I know about Haruka and
that's the baby that you have to look after in Yakuza. There's a baby you have to look after in Yakuza 6, I think. It's something connected to it. These are good games. You should play them.
Yep. Speaking of good games, there are games coming out next week, but they might not be that good. One of them is great. Oh. One of them is great. So let's talk about what's coming out next week. We have on the 7th, we have Atelier Furious, The Alchemist, and The Mysterious Journey. That's a mouthful.
Okay.
Lego Worlds, Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Wildlands, which apparently has Bolivia up in arms.
Apparently that's just, it's a really fucking, it is the video game for Trump's America. It's how I've
sort pretty of much
it described as.
I've heard it's just completely soulless, so anyway, and the definite one you should all pick up is Nier Automata. Gets its Western release. You can get the Japanese release right now. It's fine. It does have English in it, so go ahead and get that.
Disc Jam is coming out next week.
Yes.
It's kind of a 3D-ized
Windjammers.
Windjammers, yeah. It's also
over the shoulder.
PS Plus.
Yep. So, other games that are coming out, we have, oh god, Clicker Heroes, just from the description.
That sounds awful.
Yes.
Just from the name.
Yep. Listen to this description. Ever wondered what 1 quadrillion damage per second feels like? Wonder no more. Embark on your quest to attain it today. Start out by clicking on the monster to kill them and get their gold. Spend that gold on hiring new heroes and get more damage. The more damage you deal, the more gold you will get. Feel your power grow exponentially.
What?
It sounds like they're making a PS4 version of a tapper.
Well, no, I mean, like, they've already done that. Like, oh, sure. Lot of, like, mobile tappers have already come out.
Yeah, you know? Like that Mayo game.
Yeah, and that, what's that money one that's quite famous? Money quest.
Other games we have are Darknet coming to PSVR. I've heard good things about that. Mm-hmm. Dino Dini's Kickoff Revival.
That is god awful. Like, absolutely infamously atrocious. It came out in Europe actually last year. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I should reach out for this. And then, yeah, it was comical how bad it was and instigated. And apparently, like, the developer of it, Dino Dini, went into a big fit against most of the European game press for them telling him that his game was really bad.
I see. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like Phil Fish, except he didn't make a good game.
No, yeah. I mean, he kind of made a good game 30 years ago.
Oh, well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, but yeah. Let's see. Other games we have coming out are, as you said, Disc Jam, Gem Smashers, Loot Rascals. Man, all of these sounds like mobile games.
Yeah, right?
Shift Happens. Sub-levels.
Okay. Puzzle game.
Sub-level Zero Redux, mm-hmm. Which is a first-person roguelike, 6-degree of freedom shooter. Talisman Digital Edition. Looks like an action RPG. Total Jigsaw. I'll let you guess what that one is. Mm-hmm. Unearthing Mars for PSVR, which is kind of a narrative-based, like, sci-fi game. And then one I'm kind of interested in is Too Dark. So Too Dark is a survival horror game made by Frederick Reynal, who created the original Alone in the Dark.
Yeah, it's like, it's 2D.
Yeah,
It's voxels by the looks of it.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. Yeah, it's Too Dark as in 2D dark, so, yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. 2D arc. 2D arc.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and that is basically it. So, there you go. Enjoy your games. Get near.
Yeah. Don't have time for it, though, do I? Or the hard drive space.
That will do it for all of us, but you can go on over to our website at kaijupop.com for all kinds of news and reviews, and we also have a Twitter at kaijupop and YouTube at kaijupop. We really appreciate all of you people who like to subscribe and, you know, comment, share, do all that stuff on our content. Or if you want to follow us personally, you can follow me at Kyoshi Banzai.
You can get me at ReasonJP.
And you can follow me at Gibsaurus.
And that's going to do it for episode 226 of the Kaiju Popcast. Thank you guys for listening. Goodbye.
Bye then.
See ya.
I sing for you. Baka mitai kodomo nano ne yume wo ootte kizutsuite 嘘な下手なくせに笑えない笑顔を見せた I love you もろくに言わない 口下手でほんまに不器用なのに さよならは